It's Monday, 20 November 1989. This is an oral history interview with Glenn Evans, conducted by Arnold Thackeray at the Salk Institute in San Diego. And Glenn, will you start us off by talking a little bit about your family background?
Okay, well, let's see. My grandfather was born in Swansea, South Wales, where the Evans name comes from. And he came to the United States when he was about 10 or 11 years old, and settled in the Midwest near Chicago. He then ran away from home when he was about 15 and joined the Canadian Army and fought in World War I. When he returned from that, settled in St. Louis, where he met my grandmother on my father's side. My father then was born in St. Louis, and as a teenager migrated to San Diego, where he settled and remained the rest of his life, and where he still lives. My father was until he retired, was an illustrator who began working in an aircraft company during the war, doing designs and illustrations for airplanes. And then as time went on, became more involved in engineering aspects besides just the drawings. And finally, before he retired, ended up doing some of the design drawings for the space shuttle. And in fact, for a while, one of his drawings was in the Smithsonian in Washington, the space shuttle. And he's now retired and lives in San Diego.
What was his highest level of education?
Oh, he graduated from high school and went to, I think he was in college for 1 year before, so he never finished college, though he attended college for about a year, where he took primarily art and design classes, and both, for whatever reason, never continued, partly because of the necessity of working, and partly because of the working during the war in the aircraft industry and various things like that. My mother also, her family originated also in the Midwest, actually in Arkansas, but moved to California much earlier than that. She was born in Bakersfield, which is in California, and moved to San Diego sometime during her early life. And essentially has been a homemaker. And she also attended college for 1 year, though never finished. So let's see, my family life, I'm the oldest of three children. My younger sister, who's 3 years younger than I, is currently a graduate student at University of California, San Diego in the communications department, where she's finishing her PhD this year, and works on the sociology of media. Her specialty is Cold War ideology in television.
A lively field.
A very lively field. Extremely interesting, though I don't understand very much of it. My younger brother, who's 10 years younger than I, and my sister obviously graduated from UC San Diego with a bachelor's degree, got a master's degree at the University of Massachusetts in Amherst, and getting a PhD from UCSD. My brother, who's 10 years younger than I am, graduated about 2 years ago with a bachelor's degree in computer science from UCSD. He now works as a computer programmer and engineer for a small company in Sorrento Valley here called Quantum Design. And they make something called a squid magnetometer, which until recently I didn't know what that was, but it's a device for measuring superconductivity. So he now, his main occupation is flying around the world installing software on these large physics machines.
UC San Diego features very largely in
In our family, yes, partly because it's local, partly because it's a great university, and also partly because it's a California state school, so it is somewhat less expensive to attend. And in fact, all three of us have really we have put ourselves through college, so we've each worked during our college years and ended up paying for most of our education ourselves. So our parents really have contributed some.
Was there a lot of family support? Where was the family push coming from, do you think? Three children heading through is...
Well, it's hard to know. I think both my parents have always very highly valued education. And my mother has probably been the driving force more than anything for her, kids attending college and then completing it. But I think in most cases it's more of an inner drive. I mean, it was very clearly understood from early age that each of the children would attend college. And then once we were let go, I don't think there was any difficulty in just continuing through it.
So the family is still, all the family is in the area.
Yeah, let me think. My parents are still here. My brother, and he was just recently married last month, and his wife lived here. My sister and her husband and her child live in San Diego. I have two grandmothers, both a paternal and maternal grandmother, who live in San Diego. And until the deaths of the grandfathers, they both lived here as well, as well as my mother's brothers and several other cousins. So I think there's very little of our family that is elsewhere. Now, in the case of the children, each of us have spent some time in other parts of the country. My sister went to graduate school in Massachusetts. I was an intern at Stanford, and I spent some time at the National Institutes of Health in Maryland. But I think in terms of why we've all ended up here, it's partly out of choice, because I think to all of us it's very important to be near family, and particularly in my mind, having children, it's very important to me that my children grow up knowing their grandparents on more than just a once a year basis. So that's clearly by choice that we kind of ended up back in the same area.
Just staying with the family for one more minute, if I may, what is the religious affiliation of the family?
Well, my grandmother is a very devout Catholic. My father was raised as a very devout Catholic, though is not as devout as his parents were. My mother was always a Protestant derivation, though not particularly religious. And my brother recently married a girl of Polish extraction, and though he was never really educated or brought up as a Catholic, has now gone back and become very religious again. So he's just been confirmed and so on. My sister, while being brought up in this very loosely Catholic family, married a Greek man. And she has been converted to Greek Orthodox. And in fact, their wedding was in the Greek Orthodox Church. And I think there's really not a great religious drive in myself or in my close family or really in my parents. So I think it's the religious interest, I think, kind of drops off with the grandparents. My wife was brought up in the Lutheran Church, and my children actually are not being brought up in a strictly religious home, though they're being exposed to a lot of religious ideologies and ideas, partly because my wife is a musician and she sings both in a church and in a synagogue. And while she, her background is Lutheran and mine is Catholic, she sings in a congregational church, and we have a lot of friends of various backgrounds, so I think neither of them are particularly religious, so I think that it's good for the children at least to know something about religion.
Let me track back into your own education, if I may. When did science begin to seem the likely way to go?
Well, I think probably, I mean, during high school is when I, you know, first had any kind of formal education in a science as a science, and where I really became interested in it, predominantly probably as a sophomore in high school, taking biology and then chemistry and then physics. And there were lots of activities like science fairs and various things that I participated in. And so when I was actually in somewhat of a unique circumstance, because being in San Diego as a senior in high school, I was able to take courses at the University of California, San Diego. In fact, was actually admitted to the university while I was in my, as I was beginning my last year of high school. And that year I took a number of courses in computer science, which was kind of my first main interest. And then once I became a full-time student here, it was quite clear that I was going to be involved in some science, though it was not completely clear which.
Was that high school linkage, was that common? Were other people doing it?
No, it was the high school that I went to, which was a public high school, but I was the very first class. It was a new high school in a new area, and it was designed to be experimental. Their initial few classes had a program that was very flexible, allowed students to proceed at their own pace. It encouraged them to decide their own curriculum and pick out areas they were interested in. It allowed them the flexibility to actually leave the high school campus and take courses either at junior colleges or at university. I think that program only lasted one or two years, actually. Whether it was successful for the majority of students, I don't know, but it allowed me the ability to do things that I think very few other students did. In fact, I think I was the only student that took any courses at UCSD, though there were several that took things at junior colleges.
Was a particular teacher urging you to do that?
There was one who was actually the vice principal, a counselor, who was the driving force behind this experimental program. His name was Hermanson. He was a recent Harvard graduate, a very young guy, had a doctoral degree in education, was very interested in new programs and very active in this area. And this whole concept was really his driving force. And he was a person that encouraged students to do a lot of these things. So it was, I wouldn't have thought of doing that on my own, I'm sure, of even being able to know how to arrange such things. But with a little bit of provocation and someone showing you the way, it was quite easy to go out and do such things.
So UCSD was more or less automatic, that's true.
Well, it was automatic partly because I was already a student. I didn't even have to reapply to college. Partly because it was local, and my parents, while they were very much encouraging the kids to go to college, it was really never considered that we would go away. And a lot of that, I think, was the expense in going to the East Coast to an Ivy League school. A lot of it was also because they had really never experienced very much of the university themselves. And it's still to this day not completely clear to them what the difference between the University of California and San Diego State College or junior college is. They see them all as pretty much equivalent in higher education. And again, as a high school student, one's not really one needs the parental direction to decide on those things. So it was pretty much understood that that's what I was doing. And in the long run, I think it worked out fine. One always has these insecurities about, you know, what would have happened if. But
how big was your high school class?
It was very small, and to tell you the truth, it was very small by a lot of standards. It was several hundred, but I can't tell you the exact number, to tell you the truth, off the top of my head. I don't really recall, because it was the very first graduating class of this high school, and virtually no one who was graduating had started high school there. We had all come from other schools in the area and pretty much been put together.
So you came here, and what took you in the biology direction? How did that go?
I was very much interested in biology and chemistry, and at the time, the year of my birth was the year that, or the year after was the year that the structure of DNA was discovered. And I'd actually had a little bit of the beginnings of molecular biology as a high school student, which was 10 years later. And the other thing that strangely enough made a big difference as to what I decided to do in college was that the year before I started college, which was 1970, I worked here for the summer at the Salk Institute. And there was a program at that time, and there still is, for local high school students to come into the lab and to do something, usually under the direction of one of the postdocs or someone in the lab. And this was actually originally designed as a program for minority underprivileged high school students. And I was not necessarily a minority nor underprivileged, but at that particular year they couldn't find enough students to fill up the places. So again, I was pointed in this direction by this high school counselor and spent the summer here and ended up doing real benchtop depth of biology, knowing absolutely nothing about science. And it was pretty clear to me then that this was a really interesting thing to do. When I then went to college, it was clear that what I wanted to do was initially directed to either biology or chemistry. I was a biology major, but I actually fulfilled all the requirements for the chemistry degree as well, and took other classes, physics and mathematics and things, but really was primarily interested in biology after that, or at least what I consider to be biology, which was...
Okay.
So what I mean by biology is really molecular biology, which is really a combination of biology and chemistry.
And was that an organized entity on the campus at that time?
No, it was not. In fact, there was not even a biochemistry program or department. And there were courses in molecular biology taught through the biology department, but essentially anyone interested in that would go either to biology or to chemistry, and they would then take these other courses and focus themselves in that way. But my undergraduate degree is actually in biology. My PhD, which is the same area, is actually in chemistry.
When you were an undergraduate, did you get back into the lab somewhere in the summer, or
yeah,
what?
I actually, when I worked at the Salk Institute during the summer, I worked actually in Renato Delbecco's lab, who's now the president of our institute, and I spent my time there. I actually came back a little bit during that fall and worked to finish up some of the experiments I was doing. I then, the following year, got a job in the chemistry department as a lab assistant, working for someone who was an inorganic chemist but was interested in applying those ideas and techniques to biology. So I was really working in the biochemistry area, and worked there throughout the rest of my college career, and was essentially working as a technician, not so much as a student. And I was paid. That's how I worked my way through college, and we published two papers, or I was a co-author on two papers during my time as an undergraduate.
Co-author with?
With the graduate student and the professor that I worked with. So I was essentially the laboratory assistant working with a graduate student.
So this was pretty unusual within your undergraduate class, wasn't it?
I think so. It was very usual for a lot of the students to have jobs. Usually they worked as dishwashers or media makers. I actually started working as a dishwasher, and I washed dishes for about 2 weeks. And then they actually found out that I had worked at the Salk Institute and had some other, had worked in the lab before, and I kind of worked on to doing more valuable things, or at least what was more valuable to them and also to me.
So, if I asked you about influences on you as an undergraduate, this sounds quite important.
Well, I think the people who probably were most influential as an undergraduate were, first of all, the people that I worked with at Salk. Was actually before I was a graduate, but Dr. Delbecco and the two postdocs that I worked with in the lab, John Newbold and Jim Shampoo, who have now gone on elsewhere many years ago. And then Gerhard Schrauser was a professor who's still at UCSD that I worked with as an undergraduate. And probably a number of the professors, but more directly the people that I worked for. I think if there were one professor who, in a more academic way, really influenced me, it was the undergraduate chemistry professor that I had, whose name was Art Robinson, who was actually a protege of Linus Pauling. And by protege, Linus Pauling at that time was at UCSD and taught freshman chemistry, but then left to go to Stanford. And Art Robinson, who was his postdoc, stayed here and took over his classes, and was a very good teacher. I thought he was very good. Not everyone thought he was, because he was extremely tough on the students, and that it was a very hard course.
But how many students were there in your graduating group, biology majors, all one of them?
Again, it's hard for me to tell you exactly the number. There were probably 200 or 300 of that major. The lectures of that major were these huge lectures. But again, in some ways, I was a little out of the ordinary in that I finished my undergraduate degree in 3 years, partly because I had several credits from when I was a high school student, partly because I ended up taking a lot of classes. And because I was interested in both biology and chemistry, when I was approaching the middle of my junior year, I was told by the administration that I had too many credits, and I could either do a double major in biology and chemistry and get two bachelor's degrees, or I could graduate a year early. And at that time, one of the great decisions of my life, which of these things to do, which probably in the long run wouldn't have made any difference whatsoever. But what I ended up doing was graduating a year early and then spending a year as a graduate student. And in fact, I initially went to the chemistry department because I was working for a professor in the chemistry department, and I could really, without changing very much. So I essentially graduated very prematurely from my point of view and wasn't really prepared for what I was going to do at the end of that time. And I think in the long run it was a good thing to do. So I spent a year as a graduate student. My original idea was to apply to medical school after 4 years. And so I graduated a year early and had already applied for a year later for medical school. And I mean, as you might see, that kind of rolled me in. So I ended up being educated at the same university, partly because I was not doing things the way we were supposed to.
The thought in going to medical school was what?
Well, the thought in going to medical school was predominantly, there was no question at that point that I wanted to do research, and research in an area like molecular biology. And after working in some other areas like inorganic chemistry, it was still pretty clear that's what I wanted to do. And so the question was whether to go do a PhD or to go to medical school and do it through an MD track. At that time, which was the mid-70s, was the time when the NIH was encouraging MDs to go into research. It was very easy to get research grants. Most of the things that I found very interesting and fascinating going on were going on in laboratories at the medical school.
You knew some people there.
I knew some people quite well. Jeff Rosenfeld, who became my PhD thesis advisor, in fact, I knew when I was an undergraduate. And he was a very young assistant professor of medicine who was working on hormone action. And it seemed to me that would be a way of not only being able to do the kind of research I wanted, but also being in a position of having a little more human contact and relevance to the work. That is, the things that were happening in molecular biology, recombinant DNA, and a lot of that was clearly something that was going to be of great medical use. And I now advise a lot of MD PhD students who are considering the same question. And I don't know what the right direction is, but I think they have to ask themselves, what do they see themselves doing in the future, as to whether they should decide one or the other. So essentially, I ended up doing both by being in an MD PhD program, but much more along the medical line, I think, than a PhD.
And you felt retrospectively that was a good choice?
I think for me, retrospectively, it was a very good choice, not so much because I know or I do any clinical work, because I don't right now, but it very much changes the way you look at science. It changes the kinds of things you would do. So, molecular biology or biology is a very vast field, and there are a lot of exciting things going on. With Drosophila, yeast, the worm C. elegans, but while I'm interested in all those, I think that my approaches and interests and directions will always be very closely related to humans. So we'll be using human material or mammals of some kind. And that was actually something that Phil Leder, many years later, told me, since he had done something similar, was that while he really didn't do clinical work, having a medical education had a vast effect on what he would, the kinds of problems he would look into and the kinds of ways he would approach them.
So what do you advise people now?
I think that particularly for people that would anticipate doing both degrees, an MD, PhD, which would be to train a medical researcher, is that it's very different than either being a clinician or being a PhD. And the reason is, it will provide you with the training to do very high quality research, but it will educate you in medicine. And medicine is an incredibly vast discipline. There's a lot of facts to learn. And what you will have is someone educated as a doctor who knows how to do the lab research. That's a very special kind of person, I think. It's not for everybody. But if that's the kind of thing they're interested in doing, then I would encourage them to do it. I wouldn't encourage them to go into that because it will either be easier for them or they'll get paid more or something like that. I think they have to realize exactly what it is that will be training them to do.
How were you, you went through the MD and PhD in quick time.
Yeah.
How was that, was getting that financed a problem?
Well, the advantage for me being in, I was in an NIH-funded MSTP, or Medical Scientist Training Program. The advantage to me was that that paid the one stipend. So essentially it was a funded position. I also got a scholarship from the University of California, which was another one of the things keeping me here, which paid anything that other programs didn't pick up. So in fact, that funded my entire graduate career. There was attached to the, you know, this was funded from the NIH, and there was attached to that a payback agreement, which was that if the trainee decided not to do research as a career for what was then the equivalent number of years, then you had to pay them back the amount of money it cost. So that for me wasn't a problem, because it didn't change what I would do. But if I had changed my mind and decided to become a surgeon, then I would have to pay them back the cost of my education.
Is that program still there?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Hold on a moment.